Welcome, cool off, relax.
It's a jungle out there.
Below us is the entrance to the flight to the moon, departing for outer space every few minutes.
You know, it wasn't too long ago we had to carry water from a well. But thanks to progress, we've got a pump right here in the kitchen.
We're going to bring ghosts from all over the world, but we haven't got the ghosts in there yet. We're out collecting the ghosts.
WDW Radio, your information station.
Hello, my friend, and welcome to the WDW Radio Show, your Walt Disney World information station. I am your host, Lou Mangiello, and this is show number 494, and I'm here once again not only to help you have the best possible vacation experience when you come to the Disney parks, but I also want to bring you a little bit of Disney magic wherever you are with not just the podcast, but videos, the blog, live broadcasts on Facebook every Wednesday night, my books, audio tours, special events, and more. You can find everything over at wdwradio.com. Part of the reason why we love and visit Walt Disney World over and over again is the ability to leave the real world behind, be a kid again, and laugh, not just at ourselves, but the memories we are making and the jokes we've heard countless times. And this week, we're going to look at some of our favorite reasons, attractions, and moments in the top 10 corny, nostalgic, and sentimental things we still love about Walt Disney World. It's a fun and somewhat sentimental journey through many of the people, places, and simple things that we not only love and revisit, but maybe even have a bit of a deeper meaning for us as well. I'll then have the answer to our last Walt Disney World trivia question of the week, and I'll pose a new challenge for your chance to win a Disney prize package. Then stay tuned to the end of the show for more information, updates, and announcements, including information about our next Meet of the Month in Walt Disney World, during Food and Wine Festival, of course, your voicemails, and more. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's episode of the WDW Radio Show. Disney famously once said, "I only hope we don't lose sight of one thing, that it was all started by a mouse." And I think Walt, like many of us, not only knew the importance and value in remembering and honoring our beginnings and backgrounds, but I think he was also a nostalgic and a sentimentalist. And his parks, by design, afford us the opportunity to relive and revisit some of our finest, most treasured and valued memories as well. And I think Disney itself was born from and thrives on a sense of nostalgia. It's in its DNA, and I think they brilliantly and strategically celebrate the past, present, and future of Disney. D23 Expo was a great example of that, although the delineation between those might not be as clear as it might seem. And Disney, like Peter Pan, my favorite character, and yours truly, doesn't just refuse to let go of the past and refuse to grow up. It's in their core beliefs and mission and marketing. And like the original Disneyland, Walt Disney World is a special place that was created to make special lifelong memories. And in the dedication speech for Disneyland, Walt expressed his hope that Disneyland, and I think the parks that would follow, would be a place where age relives fond memories of the past, and here youth may savor the challenge and promise of the future. And from a business and customer service perspective, I think we could explore how Disney uses nostalgia to establish and really maintain customer loyalty. But for us, the guests, it's much more basic than that. I think Walt Disney World and Disneyland, that gives us the gift that Walt wanted, a place to relive those fond memories and look forward to the promise of creating new ones in the future. So this week, we're going to dig a little deeper into that idea in the parks. Because when we go and we leave that real world at the gates as we pass through those very carefully designed portals into another time and place, we allow ourselves to enjoy these parks as I believe we can nowhere else. And what sometimes might be considered ridiculous, childish, or silly elsewhere, those are the things we look forward to experiencing over and over again. So this week, we're going to look at our top 10, call them nostalgic, sentimental, and yeah, maybe even corny things we still love about Walt Disney World. And joining me this week is a man who, for me, embodies pretty much all those qualities. He's nostalgic, he's a sentimental softy, and if you haven't figured it out yet, is corny in a dad jokes kind of way. So following that dad joke idea, he is the Geppetto to my Pinocchio, the Mufasa to my Simba, and the Tadashi to my Baymax, because I obviously fit the physique. He is, of course, little Timmy Foster from Celebrations Magazine and Guide to the Magic. Welcome back, my corny dad friend.
Holy cow.
There's a lie. I know I crammed a lot in there.
I know. I'm upset, though. I'm not the Winnie to your Pooh anymore.
You know, that when you say it, it sounds a lot creepier.
It don't sound that great coming out of your lips.
Well, you know, and the reason why I sort of used some of those analogies and references was, you know, we talked about some of the things that, look, I think when we were talking about what the idea for this segment would be, we used terms like nostalgic and sentimental and corny. Like, there are some of the things that we love about Walt Disney World that are just plain corny, like a dad joke, right? We think that they're hysterical and our kids obviously don't. And I think there are things in Walt Disney World that, like Beetlejuice, keeps getting funnier every single time we see it. And that is sort of what brought this idea. But I think it goes beyond just corny. It is some of those maybe nostalgic and sentimental things that we still love about this place.
Do you have a dad joke you can share?
You know, no, because I'm sure I'll think it's so much funnier than
you're too cool for a dad joke?
No, I mean, I think we all have jokes that we probably think are funnier. And as our kids get older, they don't think so as well. But in Disney World, these jokes continue to play. And I'll be very curious to hear your list in terms of just how nostalgic and sentimental and maybe old some of these corny jokes, corny references, whatever they might be, are.
Well, I'm adding one to my list as you said that. So, well, interesting, since we never talk about what we're going to talk about before these shows. The only thing I think we communicated back and forth was the word corny. So I think part of the fun in this is we might be taking this in a couple of different directions.
And as we have for the past 10 years or so.
As we do with every show.
Why should this be any different? Why break tradition now?
So, when I was putting lists together and had my thought about this, it's not far from what you're saying. It's in the same vein, but I was going even further in thinking about attractions, shows, whatever it is that have been branded corny and are referred to as corny and are looked down upon and are like the cool kids say, oh, that's stupid, that's corny and all that. To which I come to their defense and say, I know it's corny, but I still love it, and here's why. So it's kind of the same thing, but that's kind of where I was heading with that.
So
that makes sense?
It absolutely makes sense.
We're in the same kind of.
Right, because I've known you for 15 years, so I'm just starting to understand how your mind works, but I have no idea what you were going to say first and just how much I have to go with you here for the first one out of the gate.
Now, you're not going to go with me here at all, because I'm going right for the jugular.
Just go right at it. Go right to the heart.
Right bodily part. It's a small world, and this is I'm actually in this little magazine I make, the Celebrations thing?
I've heard of it.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm kind of in the middle of a column series I'm doing. See, you thought this was an idea I just came up with, but where I'm kind of doing, you know, it's corny, but I don't care, and I explain why. And the first one that always comes to mind when I think of that is It's a Small World, because of the fact that it's an oft maligned attraction, unfairly, I think, and gets a lot of ribbing, gets a lot of jokes. Even Disney makes fun of it themselves, like in The Lion King when Scar shot down Zazu when he started singing the song, and those DreamWorks people made fun of it in that Shrek Gogur Green Guy movie, whatever that was. But I know even before I did all of this, when I was just the casual, not casual, the avid Disney fan going to Disney, I'd read the guidebooks. And so many of them, you'd get to It's a Small World, and they would tell you, don't bother. It's corny. It's for little kids. It's old. It's a stupid song. It goes over and over, you know, or even to the extent we see cartoons like I've been trapped on there for hours. It was worse than the Tower of Terror, you know, things like that. And it bugs me. And I know we've talked about It's a Small World so many times. It's one of my all-time favorite attractions. I know it's my stepfather's favorite attractions. He has a little – it's a small button pin that plays a song. Whenever he gets depressed, he plays it. But it's one of the, it's an attraction you just need to look at and appreciate it the right way and understand what it is, I guess. I don't know. I was going to say – what I don't want to do really is go into the history – and why it's important and why it matters and why it's important in Disney history and how iconic it is. It's just appreciate it for what it is. And I think what it gets the bad rap for, it's yeah, – all right, the song is – I love the song, but yeah, I get it. It goes over and over again. But I get the feeling it's just the message is today just sounds corny. Like let's all be together, kumbaya, be arm in arm and – no troubles and all that, and maybe the cynical among us don't think that's possible or that's even something realistic, and it's pie in the sky and whatever, and it's silly and it's for kids and all that. But, you know, I love it. I think the message is a fantastic one. The attraction is wonderful, though. Look at it. I see so many – when I'm riding it, I see so many people going through and they're talking to each other, looking on their phones. They're not looking. And it drives me crazy. But I just want to be the one that sticks the flag at the top of the mountain, say, it's a small world. It's one of the greatest attractions ever. I don't care what all the guidebooks say. You got to go on it. You got to see it. Don't put it on your don't bother list because it's boring. So,
is it a must-do every time you go?
Absolutely, it's a must-do every time I go. And I think – well, for us, because I think we're going to get into a lot of this when you said nostalgia. A lot of this is nostalgia. And for me, It's a Small World does have a lot of its appeal to me is nostalgic, because I remember when it's young. And to me, it does embody all the good things about Disney and Walt Disney. And when you do know the history, it's more meaningful and stuff. And I get if you're a kid today and you go on and you don't know any of this stuff, it might seem, you know, it doesn't go upside down, doesn't flip, it doesn't scare you. So, you know, ho-hum. But I think it's definitely – I don't think it's definitely a must-do. It is a must-do.
So I'm going to tell you something, Timmy Foster. As you climb to the top of the mountain and you plant the Small World flag up there, I'm going to be standing there with you, arm in arm, hand in hand, waving the It's a Small World flag as hard as I possibly can. And I will tell you, this was on my list, and – I'm serious when I say this was the most important one for me that was on here, because there are so many things that are, you can call it corny, you can call it sentimental, you can call it nostalgic. Those are the things that I love about this attraction. And when I think of It's a Small World, that the words that came to mind were childlike innocence. There is an innocence to this attraction that I love. And I think, look, I think this is an attraction that you need to stop and listen to the words, right? And you talked about the history of what it was supposed to, or not really wanting to talk about the history, but you knew that when the Sherman Brothers were first coming up with this idea, they were going to have all these different national anthems playing, and it was just, it was a mess. It was just cacophonous, and it didn't work. You alluded to this, and so I want to piggyback on it, right? I think you need to listen to these words, because I think now more than ever, in a world that can sometimes be somewhat tumultuous, we need to do what Walt told them to do, which was play that single song. Every child should be singing a single song throughout the entire attraction, right? So maybe we need to do what the attraction is preaching. We need to look at the children for the future and the possibility of unifying everybody, right? This attraction was created as a tribute to peace and friendship and global harmony and the children of the world. It's an attraction that anybody can ride. And I think for a lot of people, this is one that they may laugh about it now, but it's probably one of the earliest memories that generations of Disney fans have. And, you know, look, the song itself, laugh as you might about it, you know, they never copyrighted that song. And that was done deliberately because it was meant to be a gift to all the children of all the world. And that's something that sort of makes me love Disney even more. You referenced how it was heard in everything from video games to movies like Ant-Man and The Lion King and The Muppet Show on TV. There's nothing high-tech about this. There's nothing groundbreaking about it. It is just simple, and it's timeless, and yeah, maybe it's even corny, and I, for one, hope this attraction never, ever changes. I embrace the corniness and the sentimentality that is It's a Small World.
I do too. I will note, I was doing a little piece on Small World for something else. It was neat to see, and you're right, it's not filled with state-of-the-art animatronics. It's not filled with CGI effects. It's not filled with all this stuff. I will say, I will give them a nod, and this was unobtrusive and okay. I do like the touch at the end now where they will flash up goodbye with your name, thanks to your magic. Bam, it took me a while to figure out how they knew what my name was. But that's pretty cool. And it doesn't really change anything. In fact, I think it makes it a little even more endearing because now you're more a part of it. But I was gonna go with me here. Why not? This shit takes an hour and a half anyway. So, but I'm gonna tie this into the Beatles. Wait till you see how I do this.
Wait, what?
Go with me here. Go with me here. So, I think it's what you were saying. Listening to the words, listening to the message, and appreciating the message for what it is. And it's simple. It's happy. And it's naive. I admit it's naive. And it's great that it's naive. I think that's part of the charm of It's a Small World. And you kind of said it different ways. It lets you become a child again where it was okay to be naive. And it was okay to believe that everything could be good. And we were all in a happy place. Not unlike a certain Beatle. See how I'm doing this?
If you're going to tell me that you are the walrus, we're done here.
No, hold on. I remember an interview like of seeing John Lennon when he was talking about Give Peace a Chance. And it was the same kind of idea. People were asking him, you know, they're getting on him like, you know, all right, you make a song. Who cares? What, you know, there's everything going on. You think this is going to make a bit of difference? Like, who do you think you are? And he was basically just saying, look, this is what I do. I sing. I can't do anything else. So I'm going to say it. It's naive. I get it. But that's all I can do. But if you think about it, yeah, you can have it if you want it. Peace in this case. But the idea is that, you know, it's okay to break everything down and be naive. And sometimes it can be that simple. Sometimes it can't be. And I understand that. And the real world comes in. But, you know, it's nice to be naive sometimes.
Listen, you know, if it's naivete, that
naivete,
I'll take it, you know, because, and look, I think, and I actually did go with you there. And for once in 15 years, I went with you and I agree with you because though the mountains divide and the oceans are wide, it is a small world after all, the same way that, you know, you may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. You know, imagine all people living in peace. Is it far-fetched? Is it, call it whatever you want, yes, is the messaging the same? And is it something to maybe strive for? And maybe our kids and the generations after us will figure it out somehow? So I'm with you, brother. I dig it unapologetically.
There you go. It's hopelessly naive. Like he said, like, you know, I'm going to say something why don't I say this? This is a nice thing to say, so I'm going to say it. There you go.
I would give you a hug. I would give you a hug on top of that mountain right there. This really should be the last one, because now how do we follow it up from here? But
good night, folks.
Good night, everybody. That was our top one list.
Yeah, you know what? We should end right now.
It's not going to be the top one. But right, I'm very curious to hear anyway. What other people's thoughts are. You know, maybe we are naive. Maybe we are overly sentimental when we look at that attraction, and other people just see, like, OMG, if I hear that song one more time. I'll tell you something, man. When I go to the parks, I don't, you know, I'm not going to ride, you know, to hit all the attractions. But I'll tell you something, that there's one or two others on my list. Small World is one of the ones that I still enjoy. It is that simple pleasure that sort of just kind of I'll speak for myself, it makes me happy when I go on it. Do I buy into the mission and the message of the lyrics? Absolutely, man. So, you know, does that make me a dreamer? Does it make me whatever? I'm cool with that. So
That's a good place to be.
So, all right. That's going to take me somewhere else than where I was planning on starting off with on my list. Because as long as I am getting weepy and sappy and sentimental, this is one of two attractions that were on my list that were very much tied into not just the song, not just the attraction and audio animatronics and lyrics and things like that. I think it really, for me, comes down to exactly how I started and with whom I started this segment, which is Walt Disney. This attraction, It's a Small World, and where I'm going next are so directly tied to his legacy and his vision for, I think, not just the theme parks, but life in general. And those two attractions that were very, very high on my list were It's a Small World and Walt Disney's Carousel of Progress. Because I think that they very much are in alignment in terms of what the messaging is. They are both attractions that, you know, while Carousel of Progress may be celebrating the past and looking at a sort of a tongue-in-cheek look at the past, both of these attractions are messages of optimism, right? It is a small world after all, but I also think that there very much is a great, big, beautiful tomorrow shining at the end of every single day. And I will admit something to you, again, unapologetically, I like Carousel of Progress just the way it is. There's a little part of me that misses Now is the Time, Now is the Best Time, because I have memories of that song and I sing it way too often in the car. I think this is an overlooked attraction. This is not an attraction that is just meant to avoid the heat or, you know, take a nap. I find it fascinating to look back on the 20th century and what came before that and hear sort of the history of progress and maybe what people were thinking was so high tech at the time. For me, this attraction is like sitting down with a grandparent who is telling you stories of what life was like when they were growing up. I don't have grandparents who can do that for me now. I get that same sense when I sit in that attraction. And I do go to, probably more often than a lot of other locals might do it. And there's a part of me that enjoys the corniness and is a bit of a sentimentalist, because I love that Walt's hand was so much in every part of this. And I do like that reminder of the possibility of what tomorrow is going to bring, whether it is a great, big, beautiful tomorrow or making sure and understanding that time is very fleeting and you don't know when it's going to be over. So to a certain degree, now is the time. Now is the best time, and make sure you enjoy every second. Like Small World, I look, you know me, man. I'm a positive person. I am an unapologetic optimist. And I think those two attractions, naive or otherwise, have Walt and my similar sense of and messaging of optimism that I love and I live every day.
Well, when we're planting the Carousel of Progress flag right next to the Small World flag, I'll be right with you again, brother. That's also was right there up on my list. Not much to add to what you said. You said it so well. The way I see it, I know some when we've talked about it, and people do this, the one quibble you would have is, you know, what do you do in the last room? And I'm like with you. I don't care. It's great. I mean, if they want to make it a vision of 2015, fine. If they want to make it the vision of the future as it was seen from 1965, that's fine. I love it the way it is now. Like, I know people quibble over that, but I don't care.
I love the final scene. Because I lived that final scene. Like, I was the kid in front of the video game system with my parachute pants and Guess jean jacket and, you know, maybe I should stop talking about what I was probably wearing, but you understand. But that was me, man. That's what my Christmases kind of, I mean, it was a lot more food and a lot more fighting, but that's what my Christmases looked like. So I embrace it. And I understand you can't make that a vision of the future because you're going to have to be updating that attraction every 6, 8, 12 months.
And that's fine. And that's just one part of it. The other scenes are just – they're fabulous. I think part of it – I was thinking about this as you mentioned this and as you're talking about it and tying it back to It's a Small World and a similarity. I think when you go in, you can have two experiences. And I just – this just occurred to me as you were saying this. You can look at it as the promise of tomorrow, the promise of progress – how far we've come, how far we're going to go, which is a wonderful thing. And Walt believed in progress, and we all believe in progress. And that's a great message. I think the other cool thing about this, though, especially for the younger folk, although I know y'all think I'm, you know, 80 something, I was not alive in the 40s and the 20s, just so you know. But seeing those scenes is very neat in the sense because it gives you a sense of how far we have come, and you look at something and you go, it really took that long to get to California, and this is how you got the water, and it's like your kids now, you show, well, records are back in vogue, so I can't say that, or showing them a CD and they go, what the heck is that thing? Or a tape or something, or a telephone, you know. And so in that sense, it's neat to see things the way they were, especially for kids, because it's even more foreign to them than it is for us. And so it's kind of it's an interesting mix. It's a look back and it's a look forward at the same time. It is nostalgic. It's great. And again, there's a whole history that we could spend hours talking about, but that's not, you know, why I love it per se.
As we were talking about it,
yours.
As we were talking about it, and I was thinking back about how similar the 80s Christmas scene was, and I was making sort of a half joke about more food and more fighting. Like, I wish I could actually film like the Lou Mangiello Italian-American version of the final scene of Carousel of Progress, just to see how different it really would have been in my grandmother's basement in Brooklyn.
Yeah. That would be fun. So, no, it's one of those. And like It's a Small World, it gets a bad rap a lot. It's, you know, when people talk about must-see things you do at the Magic Kingdom, that's not on the list. You know, it's boring, it's long, it's whatever. And I know we understand, as we go through this, you know, some people don't have the luxury of living 12 minutes gate to gate, as someone tells me they do. And we realize sometimes you only have a day or two to go to the Magic Kingdom, and that's it. So, I mean, I understand that some of these attractions are going to be ones that are overlooked, and that's fair because there are bigger, faster, cooler ones that are all magical and great. But they're still worth a look. And like A Small World, Carousel of Progress is a must-do when I go there, if it's open, which is sad when it's not open or broke down or whatever. But makes me happy.
So where does your list take you next?
Actually, it went to where I thought you were going to, because I had this idea. There was a trifecta of attractions that came to mind right away, and one being A Small World, the other being Carousel of Progress, the third being the Enchanted Tiki Room. Was another one, and again, it's the same, pretty much the same story as the others, especially It's a Small World. When you're reading the guidebooks, when you're looking at reading where to go and what you should see, what are must-dos, the Tiki Room gets bashed a lot. It's old, it's corny, it's boring, you know. And yeah, it's not some fantastic new 3D CGI laser extravaganza or anything like that. But like the other two, it has that sense of nostalgia about that's rooted in its real history, which again, all three of these attractions have that in common too, that they go way, way back and all had Walt Disney's hands very much in all of them. And, you know, they all are very important for different reasons. And the Tiki Room is extremely important moment in the history of animatronic figures, which is a whole other story. And that's not why I think you have to go in and see it. But when I do go to see it now, it's, you know, yes, it's not the most exciting thing in the world, but it somehow it takes me back in time. It puts me back in a world that's not, that was more carefree, was more optimistic, however you want to say it. That's it. It's corny. It is really corny. It is so corny. It's beyond corny.
So what is it? What is it that brings you back to the Tiki Room?
I think of the three attractions we talked about, this is the one most firmly rooted in nostalgia. Like I'll go back to it because it's one I remember when I was little. You know, it's always been there. To me, it embodies everything that Walt Disney World is about and everything that Walt Disney is about. And actually, I was recognizing this as I was making this list, that things that are going to be on our list, like if we asked a 14-year-old to come up with their list, they probably wouldn't come up with this list, because unless they're avid Disney fanatic fans, the history and story behind everything, and even Walt Disney himself, is much more foreign to them than it is to us. We were, at least, you know, grew up with this, and to them, you're talking to kids that when they were born, there are already four parks open, you know, so they don't have a nostalgic remembrance of this. So it really just comes down to that to me. It's being there and being in Disney and just being able to experience that Disney, everything is a bright, big, wonderful tomorrow, small world. That the whole notion is there in the Tiki Room. Even though I don't think the songs really say that so much, but it's just the sense that this was part of Walt's dream just as much as all the other ones were. So,
you know, from a Walt Disney World perspective, from a Walt Disney, and I'm with you, and this was actually not on my list, but it is in my heart. But I will tell you that from a Walt Disney World perspective, the 2011 was the most significant year for me for this attraction, because that is when that mysterious fire broke out in the theater, causing some damage to the audio animatronic Iago and some of the other things in the attraction that suffered water damage, which gave Imagineers an opportunity to return it to its original glory. And, you know, I think it was at a time when a sense of nostalgia was just starting to really come more to the forefront. And I give credit to D23. I give credit to the archives doing a lot of things, bringing a lot of this sentimentality back to us in Expo and Destination D and some of the things that the Archives was doing. But I think what it did was it started to help usher in a return to some of those things that we loved, whether it was the, you know, the Orange Bird or this original sort of version of the attraction. And I'm with you, man. Like, it's one that I will go to. We practically probably know the script, right? We know all the songs, but that's why I go back. And I think for a lot of these things, there is something comfortable and comforting about it. Because we do know what's going to happen next. We do love the songs. In our mind, we're singing the Tiki 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 Room or Let's All Sing Like the Birdies Sing. I love, you know, listening to the voices, to hear, you know, a Thurl Ravenscroft in there or on the Disney side, like, you know, a Jerry Orbach as Pierre. Those are some of the things that I look forward to and I listen for. And I think that's part of the reason. Look, this entire show, this entire list, I think are based more in our hearts than they are in our heads because of it's the way these things make us feel as opposed to what you alluded to, it being a thrill ride, a fast ride, a heart-pounding type of thing. Because none of the things on our list so far have been anything like that.
No. And actually, the under new management part, as you mentioned it, I was thinking about it. That kind of, in a weird way, maybe illustrates what we're talking about. Because I remember when that came about, you know, being an effort to update the ride, make it more, bring the people back in, make it more hip, make it more today, get the kids, get, you know, make it. More modern, more try to get it be more popular. And it, I don't really remember it that much. I remember seeing it. What I remember though is that in the effort to modernize it and to bring it up to date, quote unquote, it quickly, to me at least, got dated really fast. Mm-hmm. In a different way, like in the 80s, like they were using like 80s. Like Miami Sound Machine songs and stuff like that, which, you know, a few, as you move on, they're dated. And there's a difference between dated 10 years ago, which we all remember, and then being dated back to Walt Disney's time, right, which was, you know, before our time. And that's a time we could be nostalgic about. You could be nostalgic about the 80s and your parachute pants, and I really, really want to see a picture of them.
No, you don't. But, trust me. But, nobody wants to see a picture of me in parachute pants.
But I was thinking about that kind of really illustrated what we've been talking about. Like, all these attractions are dated in a sense, but they're dated so far back in tradition and history that that's okay, and it's kind of neat.
It's a sentimental dating. It's different than Timekeeper when Boys to Men is singing Coolie High Harmony in Motown Philly. Like, that gets dated 10 years from now, and nobody's going, you know, I really miss Boys to Men and Timekeeper. It's very, very different. You know, that was corny, and it's still kind of corny, but does not stand the test of time like all the things that we've been talking about have.
Yeah.
Have you ever actually seen Timekeeper with Boys to Men? You have to go and find the video of it now.
No, I haven't. I'm really curious now.
Next time you come down, we're going to sit down and we're going to watch that together.
Okay. You in your parachute pants.
In my parachute pants. Maybe I'll wear my Cavariccis. Wait, I'll take that. I'm going to wear my Cavariccis. I still have my Michael Jackson. Never mind. Let's move. I need to move on because this is going to go horribly wrong for me really, really soon. I hope nobody calls my mom. All right. So let us talk about the 800-pound gorilla in the corny nostalgic room, the 800-pound hippo in the hippo pool, because I have to believe, Tim Foster, Jungle Cruise is on your list.
Is on my list.
Right. Like Hall & Oates, like your Kiss is on my list, so is the Jungle Cruise. Look, this is the quintessential corny attraction, right? It's the same corny jokes over and over and over and over again, but they vary based on your skipper, right? And so why? Why do we ride this attraction This is a somewhat rhetorical question. Why do we ride Jungle Cruise over and over again? Not just because I think of the variety of what we might get from the skippers. Look, we know the scenes. We know the route. We know the visuals. We've heard the jokes 1,000 times. It is almost exactly as it was in the beginning, and it still is as corny as ever, and that is why I love it so. And the unknown, right, the one wild card in this is the cast member. They have a script that they're supposed to follow, but they can vary slightly. They can sort of, you know, move lanes a little bit. And I think that is, and look, one of the things I love about that is when, if there's a little bit of traffic and your boat is queued to sort of go to the dock at the very end, so often you'll find cast members that just sort of riff. And that's where they really sort of get to show their own style. Some are deadpan, some are cute, some are very corny. And I think that, and the love I'm giving to this attraction is not just in the attraction itself, but for those of you who are or know of or are related to or were Jungle Cruise skippers, you are why this attraction stands the test of time. Those jokes don't have to ever change. You can tweak them. You can make a Jingle Cruise, but it's the cast members. It's the corniness and the bit of sentimentality, I think, that we get from this that makes this probably one of, if not arguably, the corniest of corny attractions that we love so much.
I think the Jungle – we should count this up. I think the Jungle Cruise probably wins the award for making – the most lists that we've done, because I think we've won funny moments, scary moments, different at night, place to relax. You know,
that's why it's still there, right? And that's why it hasn't changed, because it doesn't need to, right? You don't need to change this. You don't need to do anything to this attraction to make it better, because like so many others on the list, it's, you know, practically perfect just the way it is.
I think the thing with the Jungle Cruise, another thought that's coming to mind as we list through all these attractions, and maybe this is, as I think about it, part of why these attractions mean this much to me, is the whole notion of Disney comparing it to any other theme park you'd want to. Other parks are parks. Some are great. Some have fantastic thrill rides, shows, experiences, whatever. But none of them have the history that Disney parks have been rooted into. None of them have a tradition of being born from an empire that was born from feature animation films, that were born from cartoons, that were born from the birth of animation. So there's so much... how do I say it? Like, there's so much history and the weight of the history of Disney there that something like the Jungle Cruise, I think, means a lot more being in Disney. This is really hard to express. Like, being in Disney, it means a lot because it you see it, and at least to us who know something about the past and are interested in it, it does bring to mind all the stories of – like how Walt Disney was involved in this and the inspirations of it, and going back to how the non-animatronic elephants and things came to be and how they evolved from a long line of bringing things to life through animatronics, through animation, through drawings and stuff. And there's such a history there, and it means something. And I think that's, like, with all these attractions, it's the same thing. Like, you could plunk Jungle Cruise in another park, and it would be neat, but it wouldn't mean anything, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. You know, so and if you go to another park, not to put them down, but if you go on their attractions, like, I don't feel any sense. They're fun and they're great, but I don't feel any sense of connection to any history or nostalgia or anything like that. So, whereas all of these do, and the Jungle Cruise is absolutely one of them. All of us who went when we were little, when the park first opened, we remember that. I remember that, you know, the jokes and everything else, and Don't ever change it.
You know? Right. And I think the corny jokes we've come to know and love, you know, if we had to sort of rank some of the corniest attractions, this could very well be at the top of the list. And it's funny, when you started to say other parks, I didn't know what you were talking about, but I was I visited Hong Kong last year. I was speaking in the Philippines and stopped in Hong Kong for a few hours on the way back. And I rode their version of the Jungle Cruise. Very, very different than the version here or in Disneyland. Not just because it's available in Cantonese, English, and Mandarin. Obviously, I chose English. But it was funny to see how some of those corny jokes were trying to translate. Some did well, some did not do well, just because of the language issues and even just how different the attraction was. I think it's in all the parks except for Disneyland Paris, I think, due in large part because of the weather and things like that. And but it's interesting, and it'll be interesting when I go to Shanghai and when I go to Japan later in a few weeks, actually, to see how their Jungle Cruises compare to ours. But I think you're right. I think that there's nothing like the Disney version of, you might ride a jungle attraction, you know, a river cruise somewhere else, but it's nothing like the one around an original Jungle Cruise.
Right. Yeah. I think if you want, I didn't mean other Disney parks. I don't want to name any by name. I live near a big one, which I haven't been to in years, but yeah, like you could put the same ride there, but it's not Disney's ride. It would right. be like, you would go on, it would be cool. You'd laugh. You wouldn't get anything.
It's the world famous Jungle Cruise for a reason.
When you go on the Jungle Cruise at Disney, you're not just on the Jungle Cruise. You're back in the 1960s with Walt Disney, you know, pointing out this is where this needs to go and this is where that, you know, that that whole sense of how cool it is. And the joke, I think the jokes are funny. So, but and one thing we talk about the Jungle Cruise is the interaction too between the guests and the cast members, and you know what? That's a whole other show.
Yeah.
We don't even have to go there. I think we did another list, and that Jungle Cruise was on just for that. Jungle Cruise wins for...
All right. Back to you, then. What else is next on your corny, sentimental, nostalgic list?
Can I am going to pull a go with me here on this one. Well, I'm going to knock three out with one shot here. Sorry. But there's one that's on my list that I'm kind of hoping you do. So I'm going to hold off on that, but... I'm going to go to, as long as we're Adventureland, let's take a little stroll over to Liberty Square. And the Haunted Mansion is wonderful, and it's great, and everybody has to go on it. And it's the quintessential Disney attraction. But there's another building next to it that nobody seems to ever want to go into, and that's the Hall of Presidents. And so Hall of Presidents makes my list in the sense of... a lot of people will overlook it, using words maybe not corny so much, but it's educational, it's historical, it's just a movie. I'm here to have fun. I don't want to learn. It's just boring comes to mind. But again, like all these other attractions, this one has such deep-rooted historical significance in Disney with the animatronics and moments with Mr. Lincoln and the whole history of it. But even if you didn't know any of that, just going in and seeing the show is fun. And it's long, and I even sometimes I'm waiting for the curtain to rise and the presents to start fidgeting and all that kind of stuff. But it's fun to watch. But it is definitely one a lot of people feel like they overlook, or it gets talked about a bit in guidebooks and stuff. And I'm tying it in. This is the where I'm going, the go with me part. I kind of relate it similarly to the American Adventure, the same kind of reason. Like, you have other attractions in World Showcase. Frozen, absolutely, right now trumps everybody. But even the American Adventure gets, I think, a sense of it's a show, but it's a show, and it's going to sit through, and it's history, and da 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 da. Now, unlike Hall of Presidents, this doesn't have a historical connection that goes all the way back to Walt Disney. But I think they're similar in the sense that it's overlooked because there's a perception of it's an educational thing, and you equate that with being corny. But I'm going to go even further and talk about the American Adventure being the centerpiece of World Showcase, and I'm going to lump all of World Showcase into this because.
So wait, let me just get this straight. Your next one is Hall of Presidents, American Adventure, and all of World Showcase.
And all of World Showcase.
Just,
so I've
just
knocked
to be clear.
I've knocked a park and a half out in one shot. And the only reason I'm mentioning World Showcase, I'm not saying people don't go there. I'm not saying people think it's corny, but I don't think they do. And I don't think that there is that perception out there. But there is a perception, which you hear sometimes, especially out in the blog sphere and in some books and whatnot. The idea of the 11 country pavilions are all sitting next to each other. We're all friends. We're all happy. Well, don't you remember that, you know, such and such happened like 60 years ago? And shouldn't we be remembering things like that? And why aren't we pointing things like that out? And it's a heavy discussion, admittedly. But the many things I really like about World Showcase is the idea that cultures from all around the world could come together and we could be together. We can share everything about our cultures with each other, how we dress, how we eat, the customs we have, our languages. And you know, we're in a place where we are free to share them. And there's differences, but they're good and we can get along. And it goes back to – hey, it goes back to it's a small world, you know, like we can get along if we want to. And I think that's a big part of what World Showcase is about, you know, is fostering togetherness of cultures from around the world. So from a little group of presidents sitting in their chairs in a hall, I took us all the way around the world and brought it all together. I said, can't we just all live in a happy, happy, small world after all?
That was a long, circuitous, almost exhausting journey. Excuse me, around all the theme parks. But how you connected those dots was
brilliant.
There's a fine line between brilliance and insanity, and I'm not really sure which side you teeter on.
I don't think there's any doubt what side I teeter on.
Yeah, I know.
Now, I'm curious. I'm hoping you go one place here.
I think I know where you're hoping I was going to go. And I was going to do it because I thought it was going to tie into where you started. But as I was thinking about this list and I was thinking, you know, the word corny keeps coming up and nostalgia and sentimentality. I'm going to go to a certain degree off the beaten path. To
oh,
somewhere.
It's okay for you to
sorry?
Go. It's okay for you when we wander.
Well, but I'm not asking you to go with me here, but right. But because that's all you. But when I think of things that are corny and funny and just a simple pleasure and family friendly and quintessential Walt Disney World and something that. You know, if we're talking about, you know, Walt never saw it, but man, I think he would dig it. And that would be the Hoop-Dee-Doo musical review.
Okay.
That for me is, and listen, I will take the fact that it's all you can eat food out of the equation and the cornbread and buckets of chicken, because that's something separate. But I think the Hoop-Dee-Doo, and I've seen it countless times, you know, dozens and dozens of times. And oftentimes, if we have friends come down, we'll go and do it again. And I love watching, especially first-timers' reactions to it as much as I like watching the show, because this, too, has not changed in the more than 30, I think it's like 38,000 performances that it has done over the past 40-plus years. You talk about things that stand the test of time being really one of the longest continuously running musical stage shows in American theater history. Like, not just Walt Disney World. There is something special to it. And it's funny because I think if you try, Tim, to explain to a first timer who doesn't really know what it is and what they're getting themselves into, you almost have a tough time explaining it, right? Because it is so corny, it is so campy, it is so goofy. But there is something that is timeless about it, that has, you know, the 38,000 plus people, there are so many of them that are repeat viewers and repeat visitors. And this is one that I know people say every trip, this is one of the things, it's a must do. There are memories associated with this. There are stories that are associated with it. And that's why for me, like this show, although I miss the song, I miss the original song oh so very much, and understand why it had to go away for copyright issues and things like that. There is still something fun and, dare I say, special about the Hoop-Dee-Doo musical review. And the fact that it's unique to Walt Disney World maybe helped bump it up on the list even a little bit more for me, too.
Now, you're going to take me one day, you promise.
I will take you. If you come, the next time you come down here, I promise you, me and you, I'll spring for like the really good, you know, category one main floor seating right in the middle of the action kind of thing. But you better believe, sister, I'm going to make sure you get picked.
Wait, so I have to get up and sing or something?
Oh, well, I'll see what I can do to make that happen.
I think I saw on the comment board somewhere, not that I go in there much, but I think someone is keeping a tally of all the places you promised to take me to eat, which is getting kind of lengthy. And that person, who I appreciate very much, we haven't hit one yet, just so you know. So keep the list going.
And that's not my fault, Mr. Golden Corral. So
hey, two words, chocolate fountain. That's all you need to know.
And you know what, too? I think this is it's more than a meal. It's more than a show. I mean, if you think about it, it's maybe a little bit more than 2 hours long. And there's dancing and singing. But I think so much of the humor is so corny, and there's a little bit of improv, you know, in there. There's audience participation in there. There is something very eclectic about this show, too. And I think it's due not only to the cast members, but because of the audience as well.
I agree. Even though I don't want to sing, but I agree.
You will see. Hey, look, if you are the corny dad joke kind of guy, this is.
Can I tell jokes when I'm up there?
You could do whatever you.
All right, then I'm in it. You didn't tell me that part. I'm in.
You know, even I think this is one of the things, too, that I think even sometimes the most jaded visitor, you know, maybe the teenager or the guy doesn't want to really be there. He's like, you see people let their guard down and just have a good time. There's something about the energy in that room. And man, bless those cast members and performers who do it three times a night, every single night. Over and over again, man, they sell it like it is the very first time they have ever done that show. So kudos to them. And
that's
my server that brings
amazing.
Me unlimited buckets of chicken, too.
Yeah. Well, my next one is, it's kind of on the list for a slightly different reason as I think about it. It occurs to me as we're talking about, it's a small world. There's probably quite a number of Fantasyland attractions we could throw into this bucket. And I'm sure we'll rattle through them through honorable mention time. But one I wanted to point out, and this is funny because I feel like I've told this story at least three times on other lists that we've done. So this is another one that crops up a lot for various reasons. But I'm going to Enchanted Tales with Belle.
Wow.
As one. And the reason is, it's It's overlooked and passed by, I think, but not for the same reasons the other ones were. Whereas the other ones would be looked down upon by some as old-fashioned and corny and, you know, too tame for me or whatever. Enchanted Tales with Belle most likely gets passed over if you don't have children. Like if you think this is purely a children activity, and if I'm don't children, I don't need to go to this. I beg of you, I implore you, go anyway if you don't have children. It's not just for it's for children. I will make no mistake. The children participate and play different roles, but adults get picked at times to play different roles in the play. And for those of you who don't know, when you go in Enchanted Tales with Belle, in the final room, you're going to be acting out portions of Beauty and the Beast for Belle herself as a surprise. That's what I'm referring to. But the whole experience of going through the cottage, going through the workshop, going through the magic portal, seeing the wardrobe, seeing Lumiere, which are incredible animatronic figures, seeing Belle herself, all of that is fantastic and is worth just seeing in of its own right. But the thing with Enchanted Tales with Belle that really gets to you, and you will cry, I cried, you'll cry, is seeing that interaction. And we talk about the cast members in every single show, and we've talked about them in every single attraction here, and this one's no different. This is a fantastic cast member interaction. Even more so, you're part of the show on this attraction. They're just not telling you jokes or performing for you. You're involved, and they work with you. And seeing the looks on your children's faces or other children's faces as they get to meet Belle or play their part in the play is something you'll never forget. I guarantee you'll get emotional, even if they're not your children. But the point being, it's not – you may look at it on the map and see Enchanted Tales with Belle and just think it's a kid's attraction. Yes, it's focused on kids, but it's just not for kids. It's so much more than that. And it's one that you need to go. And I don't know if corny really fits as a descriptor for this, but it kind of falls in that same bucket of it's overlooked because it's not exciting enough for me, that kind of thing. So, but go. You'll be dazzled.
You'll be dazzled? I thought you meant like get
you
bedazzled.
Get like, bedazzled.
Like my jean jacket in 1986. What was
it? Or my shorts now.
Wow. That's a lot creepier than what I... Anyway, I want to go with you just to watch you swoon over Belle. And by you, I mean us.
Well, I played a knight once, which I think I mentioned, but...
I've never gotten called on to play a part. I've also never been that guy. I've never been the rebel spy. I've been to the Magic Kingdom 18,000 times. I've never been Grand Marshal or Parade. It's just like high school. I never get picked for anything.
I don't know. They pick me for everything. Now, there was one time, great quick side story. I probably said this before. The players in the World Showcase. Well, this was the same thing because I went into Enchanted Tales with Belle. For no other reason, I kind of wanted to take pictures, you know, for this stuff that we do. And it's kind of hard to do when you have to stand up there with a mask in front of your face, so I didn't get to take pictures. But I did even better. I got to be a part of the show. But that happened to me, too, with the performers in the United Kingdom. They were doing a Christmas Carol, and I wanted to take pictures, but they grabbed me to be Uncle Scrooge. Oh, I know I talked about this because I screamed, and you were scared, and I think I broke the internet. So, all right, we won't go there again. So, but
all right, I'm gonna do one more because I've lost track, and it doesn't matter. And then I'm sure we'll have a couple of just quick little honorable mentions. This is hard because there is one that is arguably my favorite attraction, which is all of the above. It's corny and it's sentimental and it's nostalgic and it's still fun and still plays.
And you still haven't done the one I was thinking you were going to do, by the way.
So I'm wondering if this
now you're wondering.
I'm sure it's one of these two. And I think I'm going to go where you're not expecting me to, because of I don't get to ride it every time I go, but I think this is one that, again, very much embodies what we're talking about. And it's interesting to me, Foster, that other than your go with me, you basically mentioned all of Epcot Center.
All of Epcot, yeah.
Notice that all of our attractions have been in Magic Kingdom.
That's true.
I am not going to break that streak. I'm going to bring us to Magic Kingdom, to Fantasyland, to where, to an attraction that is probably less corny, maybe, than it is nostalgic, and has some of, if not the longest lines in the parks. Not because it is the latest, the greatest, the tallest, the fastest, the longest, any of those est things. It is not. What it is, it's a must-do for probably every guest, and it's Peter Pan's Flight. Thank you very much. This, and I won't go on and wax poetic too long on this, because this, for me, is, again, this embodiment of this childlike wonder and awe. Look, you know, I still, when I get on that ship, I have that feeling of flight. And I think that feeling of flight stands toe-to-toe with Soarin', or yes, dare I say, Flight of Passage. Oh. Because when you look down over the streets of London and you get that effect as you start to get more and more distant from the Darling House and Nana's Doghouse, and you start to go over the streets and you see the little, the simple effect of the light in the street, I still get that little bit, I don't even care, I'm going to tell you, I still get that little bit of choked up feeling when I go. And what, I don't care, I'm going to, we talk about the,
let it
the
all
magic.
Out,
I'm letting
let
it out,
it,
man. I don't care. We
out.
Talk about the magic of Disney World, and the magic is real here. There is something special and magical about this attraction. Look, man, you've heard me say that not only Peter Pan is my favorite character, but I never want to grow up. I never have grown up. Just ask my mother. I never will grow up. And thanks to attractions like Peter Pan's Flight, I never have to. And this is very much a, maybe it's a personal thing for me, but this is very, very high on my sentimental, nostalgic, yeah, man, maybe even corny. You know, call it corny because it's not super high tech. It hasn't changed. It hasn't been updated other than maybe the interactive queue, which makes you want to stand in line instead of using FastPass. There's great details in there, and you sort of get that feeling that you're sprinkled with the pixie dust, which I love, which sort of helps to complete the story of Flight. So, once again, unapologetically, my heart goes to Peter Pan and Peter Pan's Flight.
I'm with you, buddy.
All right.
I shouldn't tell you that I got my fast pass for Peter Pan.
That's fine. Well, as long as you do the interactive queue at least once, just like Flight of Passage, you can and should fast pass it, because otherwise the lines are long.
Well, yeah. But before you launch into yours.
No, please, go through whatever remaining on your list.
I had a few left. I won't go long into them. Well, like I said, Fantasyland, I think you could lump a bunch of other things in there. I think you put Winnie the Pooh in the same bucket. Not quite as nostalgic, because it's not as old as Peter Pan, but any of those dark rides, even Little Mermaid, they often get passed over because they're not other than if they happen to be new. But, they're not as fun as exciting. But they have their own magical moments. I love the rain and Winnie the Pooh and bouncing along with Tigger, things like that. Actually, we were talking about It's a Small World. I think you can kind of, in a sidecar, put Grand Fiesta Tour for the exact same reasons, because I think it gets overlooked and is seen corny in the same way It's a Small World is, and people see it as it's a little small world clone, then they'll probably pass by. But go on it. It's Finn. It's wonderful. Donald Duck is hilarious. He loses his bathing suit. What else could you want? The one I put this one on there. I'm not quite sure why, but I put the Walt Disney World Railroad on there. And I think my thought process, remember when you were trying to remember what your bullet points were. I think my thought process was along the lines of, as you walk in to the Magic Kingdom and you walk under the train station and into Main Street, I get the feeling a lot of people will – you passed it by already because you walked into the park. Maybe know it's there, but again, it's a train ride around the park. Big deal. Like, you know, we can walk there. It's old. I want to go to Space Mountain and get my, you know, Fast Pass or whatever. Maybe people think of it, it is simply a way to get from point A to point B. That's all it is. It's just like a launch boat. But I even found myself like oftentimes not going or forgetting it's there or going, but I make sure now, you know, do go on. Definitely something to hit. I didn't really know to put it on there because I don't think it's looked over because it's corny so much. I think it's just overlooked because a lot of people don't realize it's there, you know, or they know it's there, but it's not at top of mind, that kind of thing. So those are I did have another one. Chef Mickey's.
Wow.
That was the big one.
You bringing food into the equation.
I'm bringing food in the equation. No, I'm bringing Chef Mickey's in. Now, because for us, that is a must-do. Every time we go to Chef Mickey's. We know it's expensive. We know – well, the food's great. But, you know, we know that I'm going to swing the napkin around. Nobody else is. I'm going to embarrass my entire family. Yeah, you get the pictures with the characters. For people who go to – think of Disney as being – overly commercial or souvenir happy or whatever, they'll point to something like that, like Chef Mickey's, where you go to breakfast, you meet the characters. That's corny. I need to go, you know, off do the attractions and so on and so forth. I one of my favorite Saturday Night Live skits is all about that. The one where Lindsay Lohan was on it, and they all cracked up because they can't keep a straight face for a whole other reason. But only bringing that up because Saturday Night Live made fun of the whole going to have breakfast and meeting the characters too as a corny notion. But we do it every time. It's a quintessential part of the Disney experience. And I got to hug Minnie Mouse every time. I got to. It's not complete unless I hug – unless there's two things people I need to hug. Minnie Mouse and Lou Mangiello. And since Lou Mangiello isn't there half the time when I go down, I got to – rely on Minnie Mouse, and she comes through.
Well, you let me know, and I'll certainly be there for breakfast with you because
I never turned down a meal.
I'm going to quickly go through my list.
Can I tell you the one I thought you were going to do?
I'll bet you it's the first one mention.
We'll see if you get to it.
So there's two that I really am surprised I didn't get to, and I sort of kept moving down the list over and over again because I think they are quintessential, corny, and classic, and it's the Haunted Mansion and Country Bear Jamboree.
There he is.
Yeah. The timeless jokes in both still play. I think, like we talked about on show 492, the mansion is still that perfect blend of silly and scary, and that song still resonates, and the script and the narrative and the effects, everything still holds up. And it's an attraction sometimes I just like sitting outside of, right? And Country Bear Jamboree, again, that show has remained the same. And although you know every lyric and every song and every character, I still like going. I still find myself laughing. I still find myself singing along and singing Blood on the Saddle to my poor children when I pick them up from school. But poor kids. I also had TTA on my list. It's a simple pleasure. It's less about the story than it is about the vistas. We talk about sentimentality as I go on. I see how Tomorrowland has evolved over the years. I remember what was where and when. I look down at the racetrack. I remember being there in like 1976 with my dad and a picture that we have there. So it's a very personal, emotional one. And, you know, something else that's not an attraction, and maybe, you know, some of the corniest stuff that you'll find is just walking down Main Street, USA. I was there a few weeks ago. I was working on one of the scavenger hunts for The Nation, and I found myself smiling accidentally as I walked in, letting myself just wandering for a while. I was watching families. I was watching couples. I was watching the characters and the parade and just everything about it. And it is timeless and it is corny. And I think that's it, Tim. I think that's why we love Disney. It's why we and millions of other people keep coming back. I think it maybe accidentally, maybe intentionally, reminds us of our childhood. It reminds us of the innocence that it brings. We can, you know, when we go back to Disney World over and over and over again, we've talked about the, you know, our friends or former friends saying, you're going back there again. You know, for the most part, we can relive it time and again with no worries of judgment of or by others, right? And, you know, for me, you know this, I just love, look, in this show and in life, I just love talking about things that make us happy about going there and being here. And there's so many of them. And yeah, a lot of them are corny. And this whole top 10 is corny. But so what? Like, so what? It's what Disney affords us the ability to do, to escape from reality, to be corny, to laugh at the ridiculous, stupid jokes, and more importantly, ourselves. And I think that, you know, no matter our age or your background or wherever, we all kind of remember at one point sitting down watching a Disney movie or a TV show, or we remember going to the park with our parents or with friends or meeting characters or riding the classics or simply walking down Main Street holding the hand of your father or your child. And when we go back, we want to relive those memories and create new ones, not just for us, but for the people that we're with, and so that we can cherish them for years to come and share them with our friends or our children as well. And I think that's the important things. I think so many things that were on our list, Tim, are because of the memories that we have or maybe the traditions that we have. And, you know, there's a lot of things that make us wherever we are from like all four corners of the globe, right? We all sort of make the pilgrimage to Disney because I think we have that confidence and promise of the experiences that we're going to have. And it's a silent promise, but we know that every detail matters and we are the most important guests in the park. And I think that's what makes this, and corny or not, that's what makes this place magic. And I, for one, love it.
I love it, too. I think the way we phrased it a few times before, very simply, is it lets us be naive and have the childlike naivete again, where there were no rules, where your imagination could go wherever it wanted to go. There was nothing telling you couldn't do this, you couldn't do that. Dream big. Dream whatever you want. The world is wide open. And we're, that's it. That's the thought that gets to me on all these attractions.
You know, it may
and going to Disney in general, just that whole notion.
So. It may have been a marketing slogan, but I still believe that, you know, it is a place where magic lives. And does that make me corny? Probably. Do yep. I care? Nope. Not at all. Because I have friends like you and little Timmy Foster from CelebrationsPress.com. What else, because I know that it's coming, I will sit back, relax. What else can we find or expect from you and the good folks at Celebrations Magazine? What sort of magic and nostalgia and corniness is coming soon?
Well, wait till you read my letter this time. It's going to be corny. Well, what's new? As with last time, we are still pre-selling our Christmas book. I will tell you, Lou Mangiello, when we put the word out there that we were putting a new Christmas book out, and actually, it's actually not that hot up here, Lou Mangiello, though it was in the 90s briefly. But lest we forget, folks, it is August. I am working on our Christmas issue of the magazine right now, which is very strange. But we were asked when we were putting the Christmas book out, are we going to have the Osborne lights in it? And you know, everybody knows how much everybody misses these lights. And originally wasn't going to because they were in the first book. But by popular demand, Lou Mangiello, we are going to add a huge Osborne lights pictorial. Wow. Back into the Christmas third book. It's also, we're going to make a big fuss about it in the Christmas issue coming up. So very excited.
Are you make a fuss or a ruckus? Because there's a
ruckus.
A ruckus. And, can you describe the ruckus? It's a quote from a movie. Never mind. Just keep
shouting, crying. I don't know what movie. It's a Scarface. I don't know. What
you're oh my god.
So anyway.
Sorry.
So anyway, the Christmas book is still out for pre-sale. It'll be coming out in November. But we are excited to let everybody know who's been asking. Yes, we are going to give the Osborne lights lots and lots of love. And in the Christmas issue of Celebrations, we're going to give the Dream Lights love. We're going to give Lights of Winter love, Osborne Lights love. So it's going to be a Christmas light bonanza fiesta frenzy. And that's the big stuff I'm working on right now. But there's more.
I know there's always something more coming from you and the fine folks at Celebrations Magazine. I will put a link in the show notes, or you could just go to celebrationspress.com. And if you, not you, Tim Foster, if you, my friend, have an idea for maybe a top 10 that you would like little Timmy and I to cover, do me a favor. You can email me, lou@wdwradio.com. Call the voicemail at 407-900-9391. Or you can post a message over on Facebook. And I'd also love to hear from you. What is your favorite corny, sentimental, nostalgic attraction, moment, anything in the parks? I would love to hear from you. Little Timmy Foster, you are corny, you are sentimental, you are nostalgic. And those are just three of my top 10 reasons why I love you, brother. I look forward to doing this with you and many dining locations soon.
Let's be corny together.
That just sounded creepy.
I know. Go with it.
Now when you say go with me here, I'm going to be a little more hesitant than I was before. Time for our Walt Disney World Trivia Question of the Week, where I invite you to test your knowledge, not just of Walt Disney World's history, but seeing how well you pay attention to the details, sometimes what you see, sometimes what you hear, possibly even what you eat. If you think you know the answer, you can enter via our online form for a chance to win a Disney prize package. Before we get to this week's question, we're going to go back, review last week's, and select our winner. So last week we were in New Fantasyland, specifically Under the Sea, Journey of the Little Mermaid, and I asked you to tell me what audio animatronics figure can you find in the queue for this attraction. Thanks to all of you who entered and got this one correct and knew that the answer was Scuttle, because in the interactive portion of the queue, the Scuttle Scavenger Hunt is a game where you can help this little animated blue crab sort out some of the who's-its and what's-its and thingamabobs, and along the way, you'll actually find yourself in front of an audio animatronic version of Scuttle, who chats and interacts with guests a little bit and then shows them some of the objects that the crabs have collected during the game. Again, I took all of the correct entries, randomly selected one, and you are once again playing for my 102 Ways to Save Money for and at Walt Disney World book, all 7 of my virtual audio tours to the Magic Kingdom, a WDW Radio Magic Band cover, a bunch of stickers, and a WDW Radio pop socket and stand for your phone. And last week's winner, randomly selected, is John Mazaros. So, John, congratulations. You used the online form on the site, so I'll get your prize package out to you right away. If you played last week and didn't win, that's okay, because here's your next chance to enter in this week's Walt Disney World Trivia Challenge. So we'll stick to the idea of corny attractions that we still unapologetically love. And for me, one of them, as I mentioned, was the Country Bear Jamboree. So we're going to stick with the corny and ask for you to identify who plays the corn jug in the Country Bear Jamboree. It's real simple. If you know the song, you're probably already singing it to yourself to identify who plays the corn jug. You have until Sunday, September 3rd, to go to www.radio.com, click on this week's podcast, and use the online form to enter there. Again, you're going to play for the book, the audio tours, the Magic Van cover, the stickers, the pop socket, and I'm going to throw in a mystery prize as well, just because. So good luck and have fun. That's going to do it for this week's show. Thank you again so much for spending and sharing some of your time with me, not just this week or this month, but really over the past 10 years of WW Radio and really the past about 14 or so years since I got started doing this. I decided to help celebrate the 10-year anniversary of the show and to say thank you. This week only, everything in the WW Radio store, all of the audio tours, and my 102 ways to save money for and at Walt Disney World book are on sale. $10 for 10 years. You could also get a discount if you buy the package of all 7 of the audio tours. All you need to do is visit www.radio.com, click on the shop. There you'll find all the items on sale this week only for $10. I'll extend this sale until next week's show comes out, so next Sunday. Everything is on sale for $10 again over at www.radio.com. Just a very small way of me to say thank you to you and for you. Don't forget, if you have a question you want me to answer on the show, you can email me, lou@wwradio.com. You can also call the voicemail. We heard on the air at 407-900-931. Tell me what your favorite corny moment or corny attraction in Walt Disney World is. Please be sure and like the Facebook page at facebook.com/WW Radio. You can also leave your comments there as well. And turn on notifications. This way you can join me live, not just every Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern as I do live video broadcasts and interactive chats, but throughout the week as I go and visit and wander and take you through the parks with me. Also, I want to say quick thanks again to all the members of the WW Radio Nation family. I appreciate you so much and for all the help that you give to me in helping to support the show, including some day one members like Ben Barlow, Joy Johnston, Nancy Turingia, Michael Kell, Barbie Schurz, and David McIntosh. Thank you guys so, so very much for the love and the support you extend. And if you want to find out not only how you can help the show, but also get exclusive rewards every month. I do monthly scavenger hunts. We have a private Facebook group. I send out personalized Magic Band covers, logo gear, t-shirts, and care packages every month from Walt Disney World, as well as live video group calls and more. You can find out more by visiting www.radio.com/support. And don't forget that a portion of the proceeds do go to the Make-A-Wish Foundation of America. And speaking of Make-A-Wish, thanks to and because of you, I have been invited back to the Make-A-Wish Foundation's National Conference in October to not just share my story about the Dream Team project, but really the story that I want to tell is yours. Because of you, we've raised more than $250,000 for the Make-A-Wish. Because of you, we've sent and granted the wishes of dozens of children and their families to visit Walt Disney World. And while every one of those children has their own stories, so do you. And whether it's a story of how and why you joined the running team, how you've participated in one of our Dream Team Project charity auctions, whether you've come out to meet one of the Wish families during marathon weekends, what it means to you to grant a wish, or maybe how the Wish granting or Make-A-Wish or the Dream Team Project has impacted you personally in different ways on different levels, I think you have an important story to tell, and it's one that I want to share when I go to the conference to help inspire others. If you visit www.radio.com/share-your-story, I would love if you would, in a paragraph, a video, an audio file, whatever, tell me a little bit about how. I want to sort of know your why, right? I want to know why you do what you do, why you are on the running team, or maybe how these stories have impacted you, because I want to be able to share it with the folks at the conference and maybe help them understand why you do what you do and how this might positively impact and influence others as well. I am incredibly grateful to you because you have made such a real difference in the lives of people that really need some magic. So to find out more and, again, to share your story, please visit www.radio.com/share-your-story. I would love to get these stories collected so I can put together my presentation by September 15th. And speaking of places and ways to connect, you can, again, like the Facebook page at facebook.com/WRadio. I am at Lou Mangiello on all the social. And as much as I love conversing with you and connecting with you online, you know I believe that nothing beats a handshake and a hug. I'd love to meet you at the next Meet of the Month in Walt Disney World. It looks like it's going to be Saturday, September 9th, during one of the early days of the Food and Wine Festival. I have another event that day, so stay tuned for the exact time and location. Also, be sure and visit the events page on our Facebook page to find out more about upcoming meets and events and group cruises to Alaska. A lot of other things we have going on as well. Also, I would love to invite you to visit loumangiello.com to find out how I can maybe work with you one-on-one or in a small group or come to speak to your conference or your business, your event, or your school. Also, don't forget that October 14th through the 16th is my Momentum Weekend Workshop here in Walt Disney World. It's limited to just 50 people. There's only about 7, I believe, seats left. It's a 2-day interactive conference and workshop where I and other like-minded entrepreneurs will help you take that thing that you love and turn it into what you do, whether it is a blog, a book, a video, whatever it is that you do. We really want to be able to help you grow your brand and business and do what you love. Again, to find out more information, visit loumangiello.com. Click on the Momentum tab. Really excited to announce the rest of the speakers this week, in addition to Lee Cockerell and Duncan Wardle from the Disney Company. Again, that's loumangiello.com/momentum17. Thanks, as always, to Becky Mankin and the entire team over at Mouse Fan Travel. No matter where you're going to a Disney destination or anywhere in the world, they give you exceptional service and the best possible prices and will help you not just before you go, but while you are away as well. Visit them over at mousefantravel.com. And as always, my friend, and you are my friend, whether we have met yet or not, all I ask is that if you like the show, please help spread the word. If you like this episode or the Haunted Mansion episode or any episode from the past, take a second and just tweet out a link to one of your favorite episodes or this one. Better yet, share it on your personal profile or in a group or on a page over on Facebook. And if you can, take just 30 seconds to go to iTunes to rate and review the show. That's really, really helpful. Thanks to you, we have more than 1,300 five-star reviews. I want to thank some recent reviewers like Zman7655, who says it's informative and inspiring. Being a resident on the West Coast, it's a pleasure to learn more about the Walt Disney World Resort. I got into Lou's shows by recommendations from other people, and it's the ultimate port for tips, humor, and to hear the words from an inspiring podcaster such as Lou. Oh, thank you. As a former Disneyland cast member, I know what it's like to share the philosophy that Walt carried on throughout his career. Listen to this show. P.S. I forgot to mention there's trivia questions every week. Jay Bravo JB says, this is the best Disney podcast. Fantastic. Just Kale says, the only Walt Disney World podcast. I can't say enough about how much both my friend, my family, and myself love this podcast. Whether we're simply missing the Disney World or ramping up excitement for an upcoming trip or on the way to Walt Disney World, there isn't another show to listen to. Lou manages to be both informative, entertaining, and inspiring all in one 90-minute-plus show. Thank you so much for your countless hours of entertainment, more than a whole trip's worth. We are major Disney fans before listening, and you simply created a whole new level of enjoyment. We've tried listening to other podcasts before, but yours is simply like coming home. And in addition to all the entertainment, you've helped bring my daughter, 11 years, I love that, and myself so much closer. Oh, you're going to make me cry. By sharing not only your own family with us on many shows, but by bringing us something that we can share and enjoy together for many, many more years to come. Many, many handshakes and hugs from our home to you. Thanks for the years of so much entertainment and Disney love. And here's to so many more. Just Kale, thank you. That means more to me than you know. And I love the fact that you and your family can listen together. If you'd like to review the show, you can just go to iTunes and search for WW Radio or go to wdwradio.com/iTunes and you'll see exactly how to do it and a link over there as well. Finally, most importantly, sorry this is running a little bit long. Thank you guys again from the bottom of my heart. If there's ever anything that I can do to show my appreciation to you and for you, please let me know because I would not be able to do this without you. And what I do for you as well. And it is only because of you that you have let my dreams become a reality. So don't let your dreams just be dreams. Go take that first step today. Challenge yourself every day to take another. And I hope that you have your best week ever. So until next time, see ya.
Hey, Lou, it's Michael Ruffin, proud member of WW Radio Nation. Just catching up on back shows that I haven't listened to yet, and I just finished up you and Tim Foster's conversation about collectibles at Disney. I have quite a few things that I collect. I'm working towards getting a complete set of Sorcerer's the Magic Kingdom cards. I have played the game a little bit. It's a lot of fun to play it, but mostly it's just going in, collecting my cards, and just carrying those around anytime I'm in the Magic Kingdom, and then going home, seeing what I have duplicate-wise, and building a set, building a complete set for myself, and possibly a complete set to give away to a friend of mine, a little boy. But my big thing that I collected is vintage Disney Parks glassware, like mugs or glasses or cups, and it started by going to a thrift store and finding a probably from around opening day, around the first couple of years of opening of Walt Disney World, a mug there I got it for a dollar, and that's how it started. Now it's grown to, I have a nice mug that I bought for my first trip to Disneyland. I've got another kind of opening era Magic Kingdom mug. I have an Epcot, probably in the early 80s, glass mug that I got off eBay. But my pride and joy in that collection is my 999 Happy Hawks Ball Chalice that someone gave me as a gift. They found it on eBay. Not sure how much they paid for it, but that is my pride and joy. It is the center of that collection. So of all the things I do collect, that my glassware and my mug is probably my most proudest accomplishment, and the one that I'm always kind of looking out to grow and make even better.
Hey, Lou, this is Drew from North Carolina. Just wanted to let you know that we really enjoy the show. And you're talking about the Haunted Mansion this week on the show. Haunted Mansion is probably one of the first places where I've noticed all the incredible details that you and your guests talk about so much. But anyways, love the show. It's a great ride. And keep up the wonderful work. Thank you.
Hey, Lou, it's Caleb Finley from Nashville, Tennessee. I just got done listening to the Haunted Mansion episode. Haunted Mansion has always been my favorite ride. Figured I would call in and tell you a really funny story. So my very first trip to Disney World, all I was doing was talking about the Haunted Mansion. I was, talking about the ride, the story, the special effects. My family was just sick and tired of hearing about it over and over and over again. And I, knew every single trick in the book and got into the ride. We were standing in the stretching room and the lights went out. The lightning struck and I just started to cry. So the very first time I ever wrote it, I only got to the stretching room. I was taken out of the chicken exit, and thankfully, the next day I got to go through the entire thing without crying, but my family still holds that over my head to this day. I absolutely loved the show, love the Haunted Mansion, and love everything that you do. Thank you. Have a great day.
Hello, Mr. Lou Mangiello. It's Andrew Thompson calling from Quesnel, British Columbia, Canada. I just saw some videos and stuff of you at the D23 Expo, and I gotta say, you are the greatest podcaster, food expert, park attraction. Did I mention food expert? Just to say. I really love you at D23, but I've never been to a D23 expo, but when I watched that, I felt like I was there too. So thank you so much for doing that. I'm wondering, would you be able to do a D23 podcast? I mean, that would be excellent forever for like people who'd never been there like me. And, I'm just like, a long time away before I go to Disneyland for Halloween in October. So it'll be my first time that I would go to Disneyland in October for Halloween. It'd be my first time, and I hope you can make it there too, so I can meet you for like a handshake and a hug, or like what you say. And I really want to help you with a podcast too. I know my Disney stuff. I'm actually in the midst of writing my own Disney park book about where to go, what best foods and attractions. So I'm still in the writing of that. It's not out yet. It won't be out maybe till, I don't know, sometime next year. I don't know. But please do a D23 podcast, maybe even a video on your podcast thing. And I'm looking forward to seeing what you do. Thanks. Bye.
And progress is not just moving ahead. Progress is dreaming and working and building a better way of life. Progress is a commitment to people, a commitment to making today and tomorrow the best time of your life. It wasn't always easy. At every turn in our history, there was always someone saying, "Turn back, turn back." But there is no turning back. Not for us, not for our carousel. The challenge always lies ahead. And as long as man dreams and works and builds together, these years, too, can be the best time of your life.
Now is the time. Now is the best time. Now is the best time of your life. Life is a prize. Live every minute. Open your eyes and watch how you win it. Yesterday's memories may sparkle and gleam. Tomorrow is still but a dream. Right here and now.